This morning I'm in Poynton with Catherine Hughes, so it's lovely to be here, and it's quite early in the morning, but we have tea.
Yay.
So that's good. So Catherine, where did we first meet?
Well, I was thinking about that, and I wonder, my first awareness of you, I think, was at Tim and Moggy's wedding. We must have met before then, probably again at some Methsock event.
Yeah, I think we did meet at a Methsock, Kayleigh probably, but I don't. But it might have actually been the first time we properly met was at Tim and Moggy's wedding.
I didn't go to the same university,
so
my visits would just be for big Scottish Methsock things rather than.
So we may possibly have met vaguely at the. Yeah. Burns night the year before, I don't know.
But of course the canal boat holiday was the main.
Yes, the infamous, infamous canal boat holiday.
Yes.
Yes. And what, do you drink tea?
Yes. Lots. As we have discovered, as I am on my third mug before 9 o'clock in the morning.
And what's your favourite tea?
Well, I think tea depends on the time of day that you're drinking it. So first thing in the morning, it really has to be bog standard. But I do treat myself to a Lady Grey tea at sort of 4 o'clock. My mid-afternoon cup of tea will tend to be Lady Grey.
Does it come in a special cup or mug?
No, it's the same.
It's just a different...
With a chip, normally.
Just different tea.
Just different tea, yes.
So, yes, tea different... defined by time of day. There's quite a lot of people who've said that.
Yes.
So the next question is, how do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I think it's very difficult to assess exactly, well, the different aspects of that. There are many churches that are dying, but the church isn't Christianity, and it isn't faith, it isn't what we all are. There are many people who I think have had a church upbringing and then have drifted away, and I know I would speak to friends who would say, you know, would say they are Christians but have absolutely no intention of ever coming into church. They're not averse to us, they're just, you know, just don't really mind. They don't see the importance of it being an active part of their day-to-day life. It is just lying dormant within them. And then I look at things like we've had this weekend with the royal wedding and all the talk that there's been following Bishop Michael Curry's sermon, and everybody going, wow, you know, maybe there is something in church. And I think, well, yes, this is the gospel, this is the news, this is what is preached up and down the country, you know, every week of the year. Maybe not always with the same sort of passion, but it is what is heard. So is it dying or is it sleeping? I don't know. That doesn't help you, does it? Not knowing. Do you like a definitive answer? A lot of it is living. I think that's the other thing. A lot of the church is living. There are many churches that are bursting with faith, that are church planting and that are growing.
See, our stats are odd. So that Sunday morning, there seems to be now almost nothing I can do to get people to come to church on Sunday morning. But our other things, so some of our Sunday afternoons, both traditional, so we have a big nursing home communion in one of the places on a Sunday afternoon. We have a fresh expression on a Sunday, later on a Sunday afternoon, once a fortnight. And then the things that we do in the week, some of which are very traditional and some of which are very non-traditional, they are growing. But Sunday mornings, I can't do Sunday mornings. It just is impossible.
I do recall very distinctly talking with friends in Zambia, and Zambia was much more a place where you worked 6 days a week. The working week really finished Saturday lunchtime, really. And they were friends who would have happily come to church, but Sunday was the only day they had as a family. The only time they saw their husbands and kids all together. And I have often thought about that and thought, you know, this is some of the problem, is if your only time for spending with your family is in church, what is it about church that would drag you away from having a day out in glorious sunshine and walking the hills and having a picnic or whatever it may be that you want to do together as a family?
Your specialist questions.
My specialist questions.
Not your specialist questions. The first of your specialist questions is, why was writing about your time in Africa so important to you?
I never wanted to go. I mean, that's where we start. I never wanted to go. I was really very vocal about it, and I was only going because I had to. I was being dragged along by my husband. And at the time, my children were 2.5 and 7 months. It wasn't what I figured was right for these four things. But it changed me, and it changed because it was so different. And I think that is why the need to write was there. There was a practical reason in that when we got back to the UK, I didn't have a job. My children were then both at school, and I had nothing to do for 6 hours of the day. And so I thought, I was in a new place too, so I didn't know anybody. So I thought, well, I might as well write about what's happened. But I think we've all got a story. You know, I mean, my life's, it's different to everybody else, but in many ways it's no different to anybody else. All I've done is struggle with bringing up two children, which makes me much the same as every other mother, apart from those who have one or three or whatever. And I just did it in a different place. But I think stories are worth telling. And I'm going to link that in with your church story, because I think telling stories in church, telling stories of how you've come to know your faith, come to know God and Jesus, is the most transforming thing. And for me, I find that really exciting when people are prepared to talk about what Jesus is doing in their lives. Stories are important.
I wonder if it's something we sometimes miss out on in the Anglican Church. We had a scheme a few years ago, and I don't know why we don't do it anymore, because we worked out that people in their home churches might find that really quite difficult. So in Advent, we had a scheme called Advent Angels, and we swapped people from the different churches in the deanery. So people went to a different church to essentially to tell their story. So they would come from one place to another place and tell their story, which was tied in with the story of the place, often tied in with the story of the other place. And it was a really kind of biblical thing to do, I think. It was almost like those letters were being sent from one church in our group to another, and it was great. And we stopped doing it. Maybe we should reinstate it.
I have to say, if I had a pen, I would be jotting this down as an idea. I'm thinking, haha, local preacher's meeting, I'm going to raise this.
But they weren't the vicars, and they weren't the lay ministers. They were just ordinary someone people who had a story to tell. A few were like lay ministers in training or something. That was a really good experience for them. But they were people who just went and told their story. It got arranged into one of the Advent services, whichever was going to be most appropriate. Yeah. I'd almost forgotten about that, but that reminded me. Next specialist question. Mm-hmm. How do you think the church could most help families with children with special needs?
It's quite a broad question, because special needs covers so much. I mean, you know that our daughter has her own learning difficulties, but that her needs are so different from a child in a wheelchair or a child with Down syndrome or a child with autism, full-blown autism. She has bits of it, but not much. My initial reaction was respite. And this is when it becomes difficult, because then you have a lot of safeguarding issues. You know, I have, you know, a church full of these traditional little old ladies who I think would love to come and babysit or to care, or, you know, would be great. But then you have the whole, I know there are whole safeguarding issues that have to start checking everybody out. But I do think that any child with real special needs is hard work, and it's a constant thing, sort of from dawn to dusk. I mean, good days and bad, and it varies through life when it's more or less difficult. But I think when you're blessed with normal children, and I do put that in inverted commas, I realise we're not on the but I guess it's very hard to understand. I'm aware, for me, how it affects me, is that my friends now, as their children are in their late teens, their children are able to stay at home alone and are able to be left alone, and they can go away for weekends, or some of them away for weeks, and they'll leave their children, and their children will cater for themselves. Now, one of my children will, but my daughter won't, and I'm having to be there. And so whether my friends are taking on extra hours at work, I can't, because I need the flexibility, because I can't fully trust her to be doing things by herself. Every so often I do, and then every so often it falls flat on its face. But sometimes she does. So, I mean, she's her own special little unknown world that we try and dwell within every so often. We do love her. She's great.
She is lovely. And I've not seen her for a long time, until I came today. And, well, yesterday. And she's been... She's great. She's such a lovely nature. And she's such a great young lady. But she obviously is struggling in some aspects where the expectations are that she'll be able to do things.
And I must put in a little plug for my church, because they have coped with Eleanor very well, and they're always trying to find ways of incorporating her in things. And she's very happy and free at our church. And I know that the members of the church have been a great support to me, because when I have the days when I'm ready to, you know, throw her out of a window or something, and some things that one does with one's children, I haven't yet done that with either of them, I point that out before social services rush round. You know, and they will remind me that she is lovely. And I sometimes you sort of need reminding, because you're so caught up with all the things that are going wrong and getting on top of you, and you're arguing with the council, and you're trying to sort out her education, and you're trying to work out why there's not this hospital appointment or that hospital appointment, and whether you should reorganise this, and trying to get time off work to go with her to that. And
so, you know. Yes, because your daughter's in mainstream school, but she is. I have a friend whose child's been at special school, yeah. And she says it's quite difficult in special school, where every parent is basically at war with every other parent because they're trying to get the most resource for their child, and it doesn't build community very well.
Yeah. I mean, it's very difficult. I mean, again, I am blessed with a child that can work within the state system. I mean, in the past I have looked at alternatives, and I remember one mother, you know, really praising this school that was very small, and saying it was great for her son, I think, because he couldn't cope with all the people in the big state comprehensive. And I sat there and I looked at her and thought, well, that's not a problem. She's coping fine. I mean, it took her perhaps longer than it might take another child to get used to it, but within half a term, we were fine.
And I guess it's that every child has their own
need.
And complicated needs.
Yeah.
That are different from each child.
Yeah. One of the other things that I'm aware of is that church is, or services, are very wordy. Mm. And I think, so obviously my daughter has learning difficulties. You know, she just switches off. a sermon is a complete waste of time because she's never going to sit through it. She can't process all that sort of information, and she isn't going to understand the language of it. And so I keep having plans in my head that haven't materialised into working out how we can do worship without words in a way that everybody can
and not everybody,
participate.
Yeah, not everybody is the sort of learner who learns from listening for 20 minutes.
No.
And so there's that, that's kind of one of the things about the services which we do, which are, I mean, they're targeted at families, but some of the stuff that we do is kinesthetic learning, which is appropriate for all ages.
Yeah.
And you know you've got that right when there's a table where all the children have gone off to play Duplo and the parents are colouring in.
Yeah.
And finishing or doing their own version of what that activity is about. And that's touched them in a special way, yeah, which is kind of important.
We've done what we call Mosaic Church, and which effectively is Sunday school for all ages. Mm. You can either stay in a service, which will be a normal sort of hymn sandwich, or you can go out and you can do different things, be it cookery or colouring or flower arranging, but some other way in which you're worshipping and learning together. And it's always surprising who goes out.
The next question is, what sort of church would you like your children to inherit?
Yes, well, my thinking about that was I wanted it to be their church. I think we can get very trapped by our heritage and by tradition. And the world is moving on so fast. If you look at the changes that have happened in our short lives, we'll deem them short, we'll pretend we're young.
Pretend we're young, yes.
If we think about the changes that have happened with the internet and with social media and things, the church in 10, 20 years' time is going to be very different to how it is even now. And I think it's often struggling to keep up, to catch up with what is going on and how to communicate the gospel. I want it to be Bible-based, and I want it to be Spirit-filled, and I want it to be sharing the love of God and being an active presence in the community. If that's with a rave and a skateboard park, then so be it.
So our final question for today is, what is your favourite thing that begins with T?
Now, I wasn't as organised with my husband in sort of going through the dictionary for every word beginning with T, and I did think about tea. And then I thought about gin and tea, but really it has to go with the gin. I mean, tonic on its own is no good whatsoever. Did briefly wonder about the trombone, but I have to say, having heard Bright Eyes played on the trombone, you know, it really killed it. Had a moment of being environmentally friendly, thought maybe it's tree, maybe I'm a tree hugger, and thought no. So I went with typography because I love looking at different fonts and seeing how you can present things, and I like understanding how different words and things. And when you open a book, you know, often on that bit where it has the ISBN number, that page, sometimes it will say this is set in Garamond, the 12-point font or whatever. And I think, well, isn't it good to know? And sometimes it'll say there are two, and I'm thinking, well, which bit's different? You know, I know the cover of my book, it's in Populaire, just in case you want to go and look it up, the font. Yeah. But I think you can do so many clever things.
Hmm. Yes. Well, that's the first vote for typography that we've had.
Well, I thought it probably would be.
So I'm going to say thank you very much for having me, Catherine.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.